Hey everybody, this is still Eric Mann, your co-host, along with Manuel Criollo. It's the 4 o'clock public affairs hour of KPFK 90.7 FM and KPFK 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. We're going to be on with David Bacon, a really good labor analyst who's got, I've known him for a long time. Just to give you a little heads up, at 5 o'clock today, you're going to have the first mayoral debate between the two candidates in the May 18th runoff, incumbent mayor James Hahn and his challenger, city councilman Antonio Villaraigosa, because you're going to get the pipe in from TV. There'll be little breaks, and in the little breaks are producer and Maggie, what's your title?
She's the engineer.
Our engineer, Maggie, said, you'll get revolutionary and caustic observations from Manuel Criollo and Eric Mann. So we will have to live up to our reputation. So the next 20 minutes, though, we're going to go on with David Bacon, and then we're going to end with about 10 minutes of commentaries of our own preceding the election. David Bacon is, I knew him as an organizer for the United Electrical Workers when I was an organizer for the United Auto Workers. I was in Milpitas, which was part of San Jose, and he was in the whole Silicon Valley area trying to organize essentially a unified electrical workers group through the UE, I believe, with the idea of rather than going shop by shop to try to essentially develop a community of electrical workers. Since then, he's become a journalist, written some really very fine articles from Ocular Daughters to international issues to what's happening in the U.S. labor movement. David, are you with us right now?
I am, Eric. We do go back a long ways, don't we?
You sure do, and we're happy to say we're still here. The subject I want to stay on, and Manuel and I want to stay on today, is trying to get an understanding of the limits, and is there any quantitative struggle, for, I won't say even qualitative struggle, between David Stern of Andy Stern of the SEIU, who has been trying to lead an insurgency against his former protege, John Sweeney, and with John Wilhelm of the HERE Unite. And you've written some very, very good articles about a broader vision of labor, a lefter vision of labor. You've done some excellent, I have one, you've done an interview with Andy Stern. You've done Change Direction or Die, which is an article, and the one I read, Labor Leads Needs a Radical Vision. I'll come back to your radical vision in a minute, only to say that we share it. It's a vision of a social movement, a vision of having an organized left. You did a really excellent job of talking about, which we know, but still, of how the AFL unions reach out for immigrants in order to get more immigrants organized, but then when there are attacks on immigrants, the AFL-CIO is not an active player. I think we would both share that they're prisoners of the Democratic Party. So given these tremendous limits, and I would add the dying culture of the unions after years and years and years of red baiting, of essentially turning union positions into paid-off positions, even at the local shop floor level, which I saw when I worked at the UAW Local 645, I think you still have a belief in the working class, a hope for labor insurgency. But let's start with this struggle at the top, because in the next 2 or 3 months, this is going to be either a chance to open up some space or have some difference, or it's going to be essentially a sham fight within the elite that's going to have virtually no impact on the bottom. How do you see it in terms of the fight at the top, from the election to this fight over densification, to this fight over dues, and how are the forces lining up?
Well, I think the reason why it's a fight at the top, Eric, is because the left in the labor movement in the U.S. today is relatively weak. And so even though there's a crisis for working people generally and certainly a crisis for union members, which sort of produces some pressure for change, there's no kind of broad left-wing proposal for what that change should consist of. And so consequently, we have, these proposals that are really being made at the top of the labor movement. It sort of reminds me a little bit of what happened in New York 10 years ago when Sweeney was elected, which was also kind of change from the top. So having been an organizer myself for many years and a factory worker, I start by saying, we need change. And I'm almost at the point where I kind of say to myself, I don't really care where it comes from. We really, really, really need some change, or otherwise our movement is going to become politically irrelevant. But the price of having this process take place the way it is right now is that the proposals are kind of limited. They're structuralist proposals rather than being real proposals for a change in political direction. Now, structure is important, and if anybody should know that, people in Southern California should, because after all, we saw, 40,000 workers go out on strike against the grocery stores and mount a heroic struggle for over 4 months, and yet in the end, get forced to accept concessions which really radically changed the conditions for workers in grocery stores. And the reason for it is partly, at least, because trying to negotiate with giant multinational corporations on a local region basis is not a feasible idea any longer. I mean, Safeway was able to subsidize its losses in the strike, which were considerable, $2 billion for the three chains, and yet they went on making money elsewhere in the country and were able to use that money to subsidize those losses. So there is a reason for having structural change. There is a reason for saying we cannot afford to do this kind of thing any longer. We can't afford to confront these huge corporations. After all, why did we have, as you yourself know, as a former auto worker, Eric, why did we have master negotiations, pattern bargaining in the auto industry? It was to avoid exactly this kind of problem. So, these are really important issues, but the politics of where we want to go is not really part of the debate. And I think it's really kind of up to left-wing people to try to force this into the debate as much as we can. I think it's really significant that, the first proposal out of the box was this proposal by the Service Employees Union and Andy Stern. Now, this is a union that has been the most vocal in the labor movement, that union and the hotel union, around the rights of immigrant workers. And yet when you look at the 10 points there, the question of immigration reform and the question of alliances between immigrant communities and labor unions and what kind of immigration policy we want to have in the United States is completely absent. And in fact, I think it's even worse than that now, because there are now negotiations going on in Washington, D.C. over a huge new bracero program. And I think that there's a very considerable danger that some of these unions are going to sign on to what in effect is the Bush proposal for a huge new bracero program. So how you can kind of like on the one hand say we need change, we need a new set of alliances between organized workers in the unions and communities of color, communities of immigrant workers, and yet not talk about the politics of it, what we stand for and where we're going. I think that that's a big contradiction, and I think it's really up to those of us on the left here to stand up at this point and say, well, since we're going to negotiate, or since we're going to debate direction, and since we're going to debate the crisis of the labor movement, there are some other points that we need to consider here beyond just simply how many unions we have, how large they are, and how we go about negotiating with giant corporations, as important as those issues are.
But that assumes we have any kind of power that could be measured. For instance, if you're in the UAW and if you control 3 out of the 12 or 13 regional directorships, if you have 37 local presidents out of 150 or something like that, if those local presidents have unions of 2 and 5,000 members, if those local presidents form a caucus, which is what I tried to do for 10 years of my life, a New Directions caucus, if they show up at the elections and tell Andy Stern, in SEIU, that if they call press conferences on immigrant rights, if they call press conferences against the war, then there's, and Andy Stern has asked, who are those people? And Andy Stern says they're very important people. They're people that have a base in my union. They're my allies. They're not my enemies. Then that's one scenario. But if the left is isolated into not even having forms of organization that reach a level of scale and scope, then what can we expect except, you know, very ugly backroom doors between the former Sweeney elite and, you know, now the Sweeney elite and the Stern elite? I mean, I think your independent role as a journalist is terrific, but how is that reflected organizationally right now? Let's take labor against the war as just one example you might help us with.
Well, there you go, Eric. I'm really glad you mentioned that because I think it's a really good example both of what our problem is but also of what we can do. Now, we have a left form, in a way, in the U.S. labor movement called U.S. Labor Against the War, which is now almost 3 years old, and it's quite a powerful organization, all things considered. You know, it is financed by unions, chief among them SEIU, and it has the affiliation and support of our state labor federation here in California, a number of different international unions, and it has some political clout. You know, we were able to get five big international unions to adopt resolutions calling for the immediate withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq before the November election. And I think that that was a significant accomplishment. We're also going to be bringing over to the U.S. Iraqi trade unionists, hopefully this May, if everybody can get visas and come into the country, to speak in their own words, in their own voice, about how Iraqi unionists and how Iraqi workers see the occupation and how they want it to end and what they want to replace it with. So the problem is that, again, going back to the SEIU 10 points, here we have a union that has in many ways played a very important political role in developing opposition to the war in the labor movement, and yet this doesn't appear in the 10 points. In fact, the war doesn't appear in any of the proposals for reform and changing direction in the labor movement. So here we are, a country at war, a war which is having an enormous impact, not just on working people in general, but the national security state and the willingness of the Bush administration to use this as an excuse, for instance, for busting a union for over 100,000 workers in the Defense Department and Department of Homeland Security. So this is having really big consequences for us, and we don't talk about it, and we don't say anything about it. So that's the problem. But, you know, and the problem also, I think, is that we'll get to the convention of the AFL-CIO in July, and everybody will talk about changing structure, and the war itself will not be on the agenda. I think that, you know, for, again, for progressive trade unionists in this country and working people in general, we have to take a look at this convention coming up and say to ourselves, we are going to find a way to make sure not just that the war gets debated at this convention, but that our whole labor movement, the AFL-CIO itself, take a formal position calling for the withdrawal of the troops. Now, that's a tall order, but I think that, you know, this is one situation in which we actually do have a capacity to do it. You know, there are chapters of U.S. Labor Against the War now in all the major cities in the country. We are participating very actively in the demonstrations and the broader demonstrations against the war. And I think that we have a base out there, but, you know, we have to use it, and we have to ensure that, you know, this issue doesn't get buried. I wish we could say the same thing about other political questions like immigration, for instance, or international politics in general, or about, you know, the one that you've raised previously in this show, the relationship between labor and the Democratic Party. You know, I think that in a lot of ways we don't have a very well-developed, organized presence or capacity to fight around those questions in the same way. But at least on the war, I think we do. And in fact, I think that maybe in some ways, you know, what's going on with the organization of U.S. Labor Against the War can provide a model or an example of what left-wingers in the labor movement can do, you know, around other issues of political direction. So I'm an optimist, I guess, in a way, despite the problems.
Well, I think that, you know, we want to bring you back after the convention because I've been an optimist too. And one of the things I think you see at these conventions is how incredibly top-down, how militarized they are, and how, you know, you may go in with 23 or 24% of the vote, but the chair calls on the first six people, and the first six people that the chair calls on are strong, either pro-war, or they'll be smart enough to say, I don't think this is right. I'm against the war, too, but I don't think, you know, this should be part of our 10-point program. We're fighting up from the bottom, blah, blah, blah. And so by the time you get to speak, you're number seven. The clear signal has gone out from either Stern or from Sweeney or both that this is a minority point of view that they're not going to support. Your people get nervous sometimes when they, you know, I've been there. You know, your people get nervous because they feel very isolated. There's all kinds of games being played at these conventions that are just unbelievable about who gets appointed, who gets to speak, deals, threats. You know, people in a union who have been very good on the war are approached by the head of the union and told, look, I'm going to run against you for shop steward, or I'm going to run against you for president if you push Andy too far right now. So I think one of the things that you know is there's a very big difference between building structures outside the AFL-CIO and going inside the AFL-CIO and really trying to win tactical victories.
Well, you know, you're right, Eric. I mean, it is a really a difficult struggle, and I have to say I have never seen as many dirty tricks in politics as the ones that get played at union conventions. You know, in some ways, we're masters of it. But I still believe that it's possible. You know, another example of what I think can be done is the convention of the AFL-CIO that took place in Los Angeles there, what was it, 6 years ago, where a, you know, pretty well-organized groundswell of left-wing support in the labor movement was successfully able to change the AFL-CIO's position on immigration. Now, you know, I think that people can argue with a lot of justice that changing the position of the Federation on these questions is not the same thing as putting hundreds of thousands of people into the street in a mass social movement on these same issues. But, I guess my response would be to say, first of all, that it's our labor movement, so our ability to control its politics and influence its politics is an important political question. If we can withdraw the silence of the labor movement, which I think in some ways the Bush administration uses tacitly as a sort of form of support for the war, I think it will have a political effect. But I also don't think that, you know, these things are opposed to each other. In fact, I think that in order to really make meaningful change in our labor movement, we need to have a movement of workers at the bottom. You know, I really do believe that the most lasting kinds of change in political direction in our labor movement come from the bottom up. And that's why I'm a little mistrustful of this process around the changing direction, these proposals for changing direction, is because they seem, you know, that they're kind of like in the opposite direction from the top down. You know, certainly one of the things that should be happening right now in the labor movement is a really broad discussion at the bottom among workers and union members, but not just limited to union members, about what people believe is going to make the labor movement more effective. You know, I think that we need this not only because we need people's ideas, but also because we need people to stop being passive about these questions, to become much more active and to insist on a political role in determining, you know, what happens here.
Well, why don't we do this, David? I mean, because you know we agree with you. I mean, when is the AFL convention going to be?
July.
July? Mm-hmm. And it's not in Bar Harbor anymore, huh? It's going to be in D.C.?
You know something? I think it's going to be in Chicago. I'm not absolutely sure, but I think so.
All right. Well, we've got three different locations, so the first thing we got to do is track it down.
Figure out where it is.
That's the first rule of organizing is make sure you show
where
up.
Where is it?
Show up where it is, right?
Right, right.
And what we'd like to do is have you back on the show after the, I assume you're going to cover the convention.
Oh, yeah.
And then have you back on the show after July and give us your sense of how Labor Against the War did and how other insurgencies did and where you think things go from here.
Well, I congratulate you also on holding this discussion on the radio here, too, because I think that, you know, this show and more like it are going to play a role in hopefully helping to send some people to this convention, you know, determined to make change beyond just simply the limits that have been sort of drawn out for it.
Well, this is Voices from the Front Lines. We're on every Monday at 4 for an hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. We've just been on with David Bacon, who, among other things, I'll say, is one of the better labor journalists who's just done a widespread coverage of progressive journalism and also has a very internationalist perspective. We'll have him back on the show again. We're going to take a short break, and then Manuel and I are going to wax poetic and become pundits on the upcoming mayoral election. So join us. We'll be right back with you.